This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Possession, possession, possession. It seems to be a thing with Manchester United, for under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, United have won 73% of the Premier League games in which they've had less possession. Yes, less possession than their opponents. And whenever the stats come out and people say, oh, crikey, United only had 20% of the ball, it doesn't matter because they tend to win games when that happens, compared to just 36% when they've enjoyed more. And that occurred today at Vicarage Road. United had 64% of possession against Watford, yet lost the game 2-0. Of course, goals from Ismaïla Sarr and a penalty from Troy Deeney. By the way, Troy Deeney's fourth penalty in his last five seasons against Manchester United. I'm going to pull up David De Gea on this because there's going to be a lot of chat about David De Gea over the course of the next hour. Yes, for the first goal, he was culpable. Let's not beat around the bush. It was an error. Perhaps his mind was already on the next phase of play. Perhaps he was deterred by the post. Perhaps there was spin on the ball that for some reason meant it slipped through his hands. All of those excuses are kind of valid, but unacceptable, because when push comes to shove, he should have saved it. Of course he did. It was a terrible error from a world-class goalkeeper. And a world-class goalkeeper who, to be fair, was also pushed off the ball earlier on in the game in the first half for a goal that should have stood for Watford. Very similar to the incident against Everton last season. In fact, not even worse than the incident. It was less of a foul on David De Gea, and I'm surprised they didn't even look to VAR for it. The referee instantly gave a foul and the game proceeded. But there does seem to perhaps be something in David De Gea's mindset right now. Perhaps that error against Everton last season was still playing on his mind. We don't know. We're looking, I mean, Gary Neville said, didn't he, in commentary last week, that was De Gea of old. Perhaps the mindset is a little bit De Gea of old at the moment. But an error that perhaps he was already thinking about the next phase of play against Watford, and he made an error. Yes, for me, it was the penalty. Troy Deeney invariably slams his penalties down the middle. We see it with pretty much every penalty he takes. When you factor in Troy Deeney not having played a lot of football, he didn't look particularly match fit still, I don't think, today. Looked slightly sluggish. Caused Harry Maguire and in particular Victor Lindelof a lot of problems. But you knew, watching that, you thought, David, stay in the centre of your goal because he's going to hit it right down the middle. But he didn't. He dived. And what did Troy Deeney do? He hit it right down the middle to clinch and confirm a victory for Watford, their first at home in the Premier League this season, as they are bottom of the Premier League, still level on points with Norwich, but perhaps battling back under Nigel Pearson. United, meanwhile, now 12 points adrift of Chelsea in fourth place. Chelsea beating Spurs today at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Right, this is the Manchester United Fan Show. If you weren't already aware, with me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 10 p.m. this evening. If you want to join the debate, if you disagree with anything that I've just said, 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number as well, or tweet us at Love Sport Radio. On the line now, we have Ben Parsons from Stretti News. Ben, David De Gea, talk to me.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's a confidence issue with De Gea or just not a lack of concentration, but his form certainly seems to have regressed in 2019, and I wouldn't think it would be a bad idea to take him out of the firing line, to be honest. I think Sergio Romero has been a solid number two for a few years now at Old Trafford, and I wouldn't mind seeing him get a game, maybe give De Gea a rest.
Really, do you think so? So we spoke to Wayne Barton, United author, earlier on the final whistle, and he said part of the problem is the fact that De Gea doesn't have a solid backup really pressing him for that number one spot. We know that Romero is a capable goalkeeper. We know he's very good between the sticks. He comes in, be it for the Carabao Cup, the FA Cup, the Europa League. He always comes in and puts in a shift. He's solid. He's reliable. But is he world class? And you think that David De Gea fully well knows that he is Manchester United's solid number one. We've seen the issue at Chelsea. We mentioned it earlier with Kepa. Doesn't really have anybody really pushing him for that number one spot. And as a result, perhaps you slightly rest on your laurels. David De Gea got his new contract at United. He's got first team football guaranteed. You do worry that perhaps he hasn't got that will, that fight, that want to really hold on to that place because he knows that it's already his.
Well, yeah, I guess you're probably right. Complacency could be an issue there. And you say Romero isn't a world-class backup, but at the moment, can you call De Gea a world-class keeper? And I think that's the issue. I think we've already got enough problems at the club as it is, and De Gea is sort of compounding our misery with the mistake he made today. That was a key moment in the game, and I think Jesse Lingard's miss in the first half was a key moment in the game as well. It could have been a different game if he'd have put that one away.
Yeah, it was. And do you know what? I don't want to continue to bash David De Gea because this is the life of the goalkeeper, right?
Well, I think David De Gea has been a fantastic goalkeeper for us. He's been world-class for several years. And the last 5 years at United could have been a lot worse without him between the sticks, to be honest.
Yeah, 100% agree with you there, mate. And the problem is when you make an error as a goalkeeper, invariably that error ends up in a goal. Of course, we saw many errors from outfield players today. And you mentioned Jesse Lingard there, who, personally, I've been delighted to see back in United's starting lineup, just because I want to see him regain the form that we saw towards the end of 2018 when he was, you know, playing for England and scoring in World Cups. 25 hours now, more than 25 hours, without registering a goal or assist in a Premier League game. We know he scored in the Europa League, of course, away at Astana, but he hasn't done it in the Premier League. It's December 2018, the last time he got an assist or a goal. He had a great chance today to put that record to bed.
Yeah, it's such a shame to see, really. But I think when we saw Paul Pogba come on the pitch, we saw what Lingard's missing, really. Like, we saw Pogba's world-class balls to Greenwood and Rashford, and that they nearly changed the game. But I think Lingard's suffering a lot of issues off the field, and I think he's just struggling, really.
Do you think so? What do you think? Off-field problems have really started to affect him, because he's kind of spoken out about that, hasn't he? And he said, you know, it did affect me, and he's looked better in recent games, but today did show a lack of focus, a lack of concentration. Like, Ben Foster was out, he'd advanced. He should have. You take Kevin De Bruyne, that's a goal. Right, that is a guaranteed goal. Mm-hmm. Take Jesse Lingard on top form. He probably does try that chip, but he executes it. It was the wrong decision, the wrong choice, and it could have cost United the game, or did cost United the game, really.
No, I think that's part of the problem, really. You're putting Kevin De Bruyne and Jesse Lingard in the same sentence, and that's why Man United is so far, the league table doesn't lie, does it? That's why we are where we are at the moment. We've got Jesse Lingard in the attacking midfield, and I do like Lingard. I think he offers a lot on the counter-attack in particular. But when we're playing the teams lower down in the table, a bit of deep-line defences, we need a bit of guile, a bit of ingenuity. I don't think Lingard offers us that, and I think that needs to be addressed in the transfer window.
So, January for you, Ben. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a big month coming up, of course. We don't want to see United just throwing money left, right and centre. There's a lot of talk now, especially among football fans, net spend. So all you tend to hear in your WhatsApp groups and on Twitter, you see the graphics. Oh, look at the net spend here. Look at Manchester United. They're almost top and they've not won anything. Blah, blah, blah. Manchester City always gets labelled at them.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of the finances available, we know there's a lot of money. Do you agree that Solskjaer should be given a massive war chest by Ed Woodward to spend again in January?
I think he has to, really, because our squad is so weak, I think that he has no choice. I think with Solskjaer, one thing you do have to back him on is that he did make three good signings in the summer. Maguire, James and Wan-Bissaka have been three of our best players this season. And if we are going to push for Champions League places, I know it seems unlikely now, or go on to win the Europa League, then we're going to have to get some creativity in that midfield. I know that's difficult to do in January, but we'll have to see what happens.
And all right, so I'll put you on the spot then, Ben. In terms of creativity in midfield and those players available that will come in at an affordable price, of course, we've seen this in the past, clubs knowing how desperate United can be and charging them the earth for their players. Who would you like to see at United?
Yeah, I guess the difficulty is who is available in January, but a player I really like is Jack Grealish. I think he's doing brilliant at Aston Villa. But whether he'd leave Villa in January, it's unlikely, isn't it? You'd like to think he'd want to stay at Aston Villa, see if he can keep them up before he gets his move in the summer. And then there's James Maddison as well. But then you ask the same question, why would he want to leave Leicester? So it's difficult in January, really.
I agree with you there, mate. Jack Grealish and Maddison, two players I'd love to see at United. But yes, it would be very difficult to get them, especially at this stage of the season. Nine impossible to get Maddison. Grealish, not beyond the realms of possibility. We had a caller earlier who said, you know, if you get to the end of January and it looks almost dead certain Villa are going to go down and he has hopes of playing in Euro 2020, he might look for that move to a bigger club. Ben, it's been great having you on. 2019 is nearly at its end. This is the last United fan show of the year. Give us a quick summing up of 2019 as a United fan.
That's a difficult one. I think we saw Mourinho start, didn't we, at the end of last year. I think Solskjaer's got a process here at United. It's going to take a while. We're going to have to stay patient with it. But we're seeing the same old problems and we're not seeing the progression that we'd like to see. And hopefully in 2020 we'll start seeing that.
Lovely stuff. Ben, thank you for joining us, boss. You have a lovely Christmas and a new year. I'm sure we'll catch up in 2020.
You too, mate.
That was Ben Parsons there of Stretti News. Not quite sure what the future holds for Manchester United. I think that is the general consensus among fans. Or perhaps there's a shift. Perhaps it is 50-50, just like it is on Paul Pogba as well. We'll be talking all about him on the Manchester United Fan Show throughout the course of the next hour. If you would like to get in touch with us, 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number or tweet us at LoveSportRadio2. Back in a moment.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It's the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11 p.m. this evening. United first, then we've got Norwich coming up at 10 p.m, followed by Sunderland. But right now we are talking about the Red Devils, who were defeated at Vicarage Road today for Watford's first Premier League win at home of the season. Not the best result for United, of course. Wins against City, wins against Spurs, a draw against Everton, but yes, a manager bounce under Duncan Ferguson. Perhaps we can attribute this to a manager bounce. Let's attribute this to a manager bounce. Nigel Pearson, first home game in charge of Watford at Vicarage Road. Troy Deeney returning to the side as well. That is what we're going to attribute it to. Manchester United lost today because of a manager bounce. Here is what our very own manager, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, had to say after the game.
The first one, freak goal, mistake. Second goal as well is a decision making, is a bad mistake, making a tackle. So two goals in 3 or 4 minutes made it hard for us.
Yep, it did make it very hard for Manchester United at Watford today. And we've spoken a lot about David De Gea, and I don't want to dwell too much on it, but I'm going to just reference another little statistic, because De Gea at penalties, we know, is not the best record. And my issue with today's penalty unsave was that Troy Deeney was the scorer. Now, he has scored in 4 of the last 5 seasons against United from the spot. We know the way he takes penalties. I believe pretty much all of those penalties went down the middle. Most of Troy Deeney's penalties will go to the FA Cup semi-final last year against Wolves, of course. He tends to smash pretty much down the middle. That is Troy Deeney's tact when it comes to penalties. Now, De Gea, having faced a number of Troy Deeney penalties, should have been aware of that. And I just worry that maybe, just maybe, in an era of saturation analysis of football, saturation research, he's not doing enough on the training ground. Because since saving a penalty against Leighton Baines for Everton in October 2014, he has not saved any of the last 15 he has faced in the Premier League. That is quite staggering. Paul Robinson, who's only managed 6% among goalkeepers to face 20 or more, only has a worse percentage, a worse ratio than De Gea. 2 out of 25 penalties he saved in the Premier League. That's 8%. That is not good enough. And questions are being raised as to whether he is still a world-class goalkeeper. For me, categorically, yes. He absolutely is. You can't just signal out a couple of mistakes and say he's no longer a world-class goalkeeper. And this is the problem with being a goalkeeper. Of course, you point to David Seaman, a legend of a goalkeeper. But what do people tend to think of? They think of Naeem. They think of Ronaldinho. Let's talk about the save from Gary McAllister in 1996. Let's talk about the save against Sheffield United in the FA Cup semi-final, of course. And numerous saves made by David Seaman. It's the life of a goalkeeper, sadly. David De Gea going through a bit of a rough patch at the moment. Hopefully, he can turn it round, because let's face it, United don't really have any other options. Sergio Romero, of course, not really pushing him for a number one spot. Dean Henderson at Sheffield United. You'd argue he's having a better campaign than David De Gea at the moment. He clearly wants to be a Manchester United player. He will return in the summer and potentially stake a claim for being Manchester United's number one. Imagine that, David De Gea on the bench. Not with those wages, that is for sure. Right, on the line now we have Ben Senior, Manchester United Fan Show favourite. How you doing, Ben?
I'm all right, Matt. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. I'm okay. A lot of people thinking, oh, he's not going to be good today because United lost. You know me. The glass is always half full when it comes to Manchester United. Today's defeat, not the best, of course. What did you take from it?
Oh, mate, it was a shambles, wasn't it? The nightmare before Christmas.
There he is with the puns.
Well, you know, got to get him in. But, yeah, we never really started from the first minute. We just looked lethargic. We look like we just struggled to break Watford down. Again, we're coming up against a team that we know what we're going to get. They're going to be physical, a little bit like Everton were last week. They're going to be physical. They're going to have men behind the ball, and they're going to try and hit us on the break. But we seem to have two teams at the minute, or two mindsets. It's when we're playing the better teams and the teams above us that we haven't got beat this season by a team above us, we can put this counter-attacking style in play. We've got high energy and we can use the pace up front. But then on the flip side, when we face teams below us, teams that perhaps haven't got the quality that we've got in our team, we just can't break them down. And I think Watford played us at our own game today and managed to counter-attack us more than we did them. So, yeah, it was a bit of a shambles, mate.
I think we put the kiss of death on Aaron Wan-Bissaka last week, mate, by waxing lyrical about the fact he can go to his feet and pretty much gain the ball, gain possession whenever he wants. He did it today and he conceded a penalty.
We hyped him up too much, didn't we? He did actually make some good tackles early on in the game and saved us a few times. But yeah, the defence looked a bit all over the place today. Obviously, Wan-Bissaka making the mistake. They looked like they were panicking a bit. Luke Shaw didn't really look like he was there with the pace of the game. Lindelof and Maguire were, you could see them both getting frustrated. So they all looked a bit nervous on the ball. So it was a bit of a strange one from the defensive point of view, yeah.
We've got to talk Mr. Pogba because he's back. He is back. And it was quite enjoyable, to be fair, for a few months, not really talking about Paul Pogba. He came up occasionally in conversation, as he naturally would do, being Manchester United's record signing. However, he came on today and we spoke to Wayne Barton, early United author and historian, and he said, you know what, I'd expect that kind of performance from Paul Pogba. You know, he cost 80 plus million. Yes, you'd expect him to put in a performance like that, but he still came on and didn't really impact or change the game. I thought that was a little harsh. I thought he came on and I was pleasantly surprised. I thought he looked fit. I thought he looked quite sharp. He delivered a great ball over the top for Mason Greenwood when Greenwood should have scored. He did the same for Marcus Rashford when he probably should have done better. He did a lovely one too with Anthony Martial, I think it was, and nearly scored on that occasion. I thought he looked okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a fanfare around Pogba, isn't there? When if he's playing or he's not playing, there's always a certain focus on him more than anyone else. But I did think when he came on, and despite the fact that whether he wants to be at the club or his agent's coming out and saying he's now committed, he just wants to be loved, or whether he's throwing in a sickie like he did last week. But I thought when he actually came on, he did change the game a little bit and we looked a lot better with him on the pitch. His energy levels were up there, and I know he only came on for the last 25, but in that amount of time, we actually looked our most threatening. You saw some that I think he played literally a pass from just before the halfway line when Mason Greenwood had that chance that he dinked over. And you just actually saw that we had a midfielder there that can actually play the passes, because passing first half, we were dreadful from midfield. But he did add that little bit of creativity. I mean, we've been saying over the past few weeks that what we've lacked when we've played these sort of teams is that extra midfielder to piece the attacks together and actually play the forwards through. Where I thought that Martial first half was dropping deeper to try and create stuff himself, when Pogba came on, you saw that link-up play. So, yeah, I think it shows you that if he is sticking around at the club for the next 6 months or wherever, he has got a place in this side if he does play like that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the argument with Paul Pogba has always been that he can frustrate, but he will try things. He will try things completely out of the ordinary, and perhaps sometimes one in five will come off, but that one will be spectacular. And that's more than what Fred's doing. That's more than what Scott McTominay's doing. And I think, with all respect to Scott McTominay, a good player for the future, but I think it is starting to show now that the pressure that was perhaps heaped on him when he was out for a period, and suddenly, you know, players are always better when they're not in the team, and you think, crikey, we need Scott McTominay back. Yes, Scott McTominay's a great player, but he cannot be the linchpin of that United field. He can be a huge influence in that United midfield alongside the likes of a Pogba. And interesting listening to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as well, saying, you know, Pogba coming on was a massive plus. He's looking fit, he's looking lean, he's bringing a lot to the team, he's going to be important for us. And before the game as well, he said, you know, we can expect a good few months from Paul Pogba. So we said it once and we'll say it again, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer does seem adamant, unless this is just the most ridiculous lip service and in January he's off, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is 100% expecting him still to be at the club.
Yeah, it's strange because as a fan, the times that you've seen of Pogba and what he's come out and said in the past, I don't see him being at the club in 12 months' time. So they say he's not going to be sold in January. What his agents come out and said sort of mirrors up with that. So I think he'll also be having one eye on the Euros in the summer. He'll want to be in that France squad. And if he's not playing for United, then he won't be in that. So I think he'll be wanting to play games and wanting to impress for that more than anything. So I get what Solskjaer is saying if he's trying to get him back on side and maybe trying to convince him that his future is at the club. But I can't see Pogba staying at United long term. I think that's fair for everyone to see. So I think it's all right at the minute whilst we can't really pick and choose our midfielders because we haven't got many numbers, let alone quality. So I think he has definitely got a place in the United side at the minute, but I wouldn't build a team around him for years to come.
Okay, Ben. Well, listen, this is slightly negative. Let's move it to something more positive, shall we? Because it is the end of the year. It's the end of the decade as a Manchester United supporter. This is the final show of the year. We'll be back in 2020, of course. At an earlier time, by the way, I should add, 8 p.m. on Sundays, we will return. However, there's been some good times, hasn't there? We started the decade just missing out on making it four in a row in the Premier League. Of course, three in a row has still never been done, and it probably won't be done this season. Manchester City not retaining their title. It will be likely that Liverpool will win it. So that three in a row still belongs to Manchester United in the Premier League only. Four in a row was just missed out on at the start of the decade. We've since seen two more Premier League triumphs in the past decade. We've seen an FA Cup, we've seen a Carabao Cup, we've seen a Europa League. What sticks out for you? Highs and lows, I suppose, if we're going to be balanced over the past 10 years, Ben.
I mean, it has been an absolute rollercoaster of everything imaginable in this decade as a United fan. But moments that stick out, I think, obviously, the great man, Sir Alex Ferguson, when he announced his retirement and then went on to win that last title, that was just all of the emotions come flooding in because I've grown up and never known a United without Sir Alex Ferguson. So for me to see the title-winning teams and then suddenly imagine the club without him at the helm, it was hard to imagine. And it was bittersweet in a way because you're letting him go and he's finishing and you're worried about the future. But to actually win that title like he did with Robin Van Persie up front and the season that he had, that goal that crowned it at Old Trafford at the end of the season, that volley against Villa when Rooney played it over the top to volley in the top corner. I think that was a moment and sort of signified Ferguson's end of his reign at United with his speech on the pitch. And then you sort of think, going away from that and moving on, then you're talking about some of the lows with David Moyes. And I don't think ever really, I was never one of those that was like, we might need to get him sacked and things like that. And I think the majority of United fans, especially when you go into games and seeing the fans in the crowd, the one thing that they will always do is stick with the manager and keep that support. So I think that's worth bearing in mind. I think sometimes you can see on Twitter and see the fans there and you get a different sort of atmosphere. But some of the lows being with the change of management and United become almost unrecognisable in the way they play. But then going back to the highs, and we've still won a lot of trophies. We've won 10 trophies in the decade, which, like, bearing in mind how people slate us and say we're not what we were, that's not bad going for any club. So you look at some of the goals, Rooney's overhead kick against City in the derby, when we won that 2-1, I think that was 2011. Mentioned that Van Persie volley. The Europa League, that campaign, maybe not the one we wanted to be in, but with Zlatan and Pogba and Mourinho, that was definitely a highlight. Marcus Rashford, how he broke through to the first team against Midtjylland, it was, wasn't it?
And, it was.
And that Europa League game with Van Gaal and scoring them two goals and then going on to become a first teamer and going to England with World Cups and Euros. And I think he's a real sort of highlight of a player in this decade. And then you look at that FA Cup win, even under Van Gaal as well in 2015-16 when Lingard scored in an extra time to beat Palace. So, yeah, I think there are just a few moments that, all right, we started it with Fergie and sort of the greatest times that I've seen really as a United fan was winning three in a row and then going through the managers and chopping and changing. But one thing that has still stayed is we've still picked up trophies, we've still brought through young players and we have still kept the fans. We're still getting 75,000 and then some fans to every single home game. So I think we're still Man United. We've gone through a roller coaster of titles, of competitions, of emotions. But yeah, they're my sort of highlights and lowlights of this decade for sure.
Ben, I absolutely love that answer, mate. That is top stuff. Mate, it's been nothing but a pleasure chatting with you on the Man United Fan Show over the course of the past 4 or 5 months or so. We'll be back in the new year. Look forward to talking with you more in 2020.
See you next decade, mate.
That was Ben Senior there, Manchester United Fan Show favourite. And some great points raised there, of course, over the past decade. 10 trophies. People forget that. Some clubs would bite your arm off to have 10 trophies. And Sir Alex departing in 2013. I remember that. Where were you? That's going to be one of those in future, isn't it? Where were you when Sir Alex announced his retirement from professional football as a manager? I was in a... Sorry, David, present... What was that, David, the producer? Which time he's saying to me? Yeah, he never properly announced it the first time. But I was in a chain of coffee shops, I should say, in London. And it came across my text message first thing in the morning. I remember I dropped my whole grain peanut butter and banana bagel and double espresso mocha. Now that is media.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
Cantona. How to create space and then weave past a couple of defenders. McClare, here's Cantona. He's done it.
He has done it indeed. It was on this weekend, that famous goal from Eric Cantona against Sunderland. He backed a brace in that game, by the way. Poor goalkeeper for Sunderland. Do you remember who that was? Lionel Perez. Yes, he went down the leagues, didn't he? Ended up at Cambridge, I think. I think he might even still live in England. He got so into the English game that he remained here. But yes, Cantona with that famous chip against Sunderland in the 96-97 season there. What a goal that was. What a celebration that was. What a time that was to be a Manchester United fan, of course, winning a second successive title. But it was, of course, Eric Cantona's final season. He announced his retirement at the age of 30 as well. By the way, it's incredible to think that he retired. I mean, he was nearly 31, but 30 years old when he retired from professional football. And that period as well, I remember it well. It was a period of 8 games in all competitions. He'd actually gone without a goal in the 96-97 season, which included the 5-0 demolition to Newcastle at St James's Park and then the following week losing to Southampton 6-3. But I often feel like it's forgotten in that season that he bounced back with a brilliant performance against Rapid Vienna in the Champions League. Of course, that was the game where Peter Schmeichel made that great Gordon Banks-esque save. And then he actually went on. And in the commentary as well, I think in alternative commentaries, you hear people saying, oh, he's proved the doubters wrong. But he was actually in a decent period of form then. He had typically Cantona-esque moments, a brilliant piece of skill against Forrest. I remember he collected a long pass on his thigh and juggled it a bit and then lobbed it over Dave Besson, I think, in goal for Forrest. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Manchester United current manager, heading in the rebound. Brilliant pass for Solskjaer in the game against West Ham. Arguably one of the best passes you've ever seen, although the best pass would be that pass against Spurs in 92-93, of course, when he put Dennis Irwin in and really, really started to show United fans what he was made of, and scored the winner at home to Leeds in that campaign as well. It was a shame it didn't quite work out for him in Europe in that season, United getting to the semi-finals of the Champions League against Borussia Dortmund and going out 1-0 in both legs, but he had a couple of great chances in that one. Jürgen Köhler, of course, his nemesis on that occasion. We do actually speak a lot about this. There is a series of Manchester United podcasts coming to a Love Sports station near you very, very soon with Paddy Barkley, of course, sports journalist, retired sports journalist, but author of United books, of course, done biographies on managers Jose Mourinho, Sir Alex Ferguson, Herbert Chapman over the years as well, and Wayne Barton, who we had on the final whistle earlier, a United author and historian, have produced a series of podcasts that will be airing in January on Manchester United. And one of those particular podcasts will focus on Eric Cantona and his time at the club. And there's one little section for you, one little teaser where, after that incident against Crystal Palace, of course, in the 94-95 season, where he jumped into the crowds, Matthew Simmons, etc., etc., banned by the club, banned by the Premier League as well for a substantial amount of time and fined, came very close to signing for Inter Milan. Here is Paddy and Wayne talking about how he used that as leverage for a new contract.
Inter Milan had been trying for months to tempt United into a bid. United were not having any of it. In fact, during this time, just before the kick, Cantona had agreed to sign a new contract with United, but this threw that all up in the air. And so it's amusing how this all turned around to Cantona's advantage, because it's incredible, because he painted himself as the protagonist and the hard done by victim in this. Somehow, in a way, got himself a new contract out of it with doubling his money.
That was because he had Ferguson on his side, and that wonderful ability that good managers have to stand by players at times of adversity, because they never forget that. And Ferguson went out several times, I think, to Paris. There was one particular time where they were running short of time. They'd gone out for lunch together, Ferguson and Cantona, and I think Ferguson was short of time getting back on the plane to Manchester. And Cantona, or a friend of Cantona's, drove him to the airport on the back of a motorbike. But they'd had such... They'd kept in touch, and that commitment was to be repaid over and over again when he did finally come back.
On that period of time, that was the final time where Inter Milan made an offer. They made some kind of inquiry because they'd been notified that Cantona had fled to France, basically saying, "This is it. This is the end for me. I can't stay here." So Inter Milan made a discreet inquiry, or indiscreet. Ferguson had got wind of that, thought that this was finally the time that Cantona was going to leave, and then went to France to convince him to come back, which is seen as one of the great interventions of his time. Cantona had already agreed a new deal at United by that time, and the story behind that is fascinating. He went in with his... after training one day, so this is while the ban was still going on in pre-season, or perhaps at the end of the previous season, and Cantona's lawyers had been there talking with Martin Edwards to renegotiate the contract. And Edwards had basically said, well, because of the ban and because of the unpredictability of it, we can't commit ourselves to paying him this massive pay rise if he's going to go and do what he did before. So what we'll do is we'll give him a contract that we've never given anyone, which is a reduced salary, but an increased bonus if United win the league in the following years. And the lawyers said, and his representative said, there's no way Eric Cantona is going to go for that. That is ridiculous. So Cantona came into the office after training to sit down with them. And Martin Edwards said to Cantona, he said, what do you think of this contract? And the lawyers are advising him, don't do that because it's only a guarantee if you win the league. And Edwards said to Cantona, well, how many times do you think we're going to win the league in the next 3 years if you play? Testing him. And Cantona said 3 times. He went, if you've got 3-year contracts, how many times are you going to win the league? And Cantona held up each 3 fingers. He said, well, there's no problem then. Tested him on that. And because Cantona, his pride, wouldn't say that we won't win the league in 3 seasons, agreed to the contract, which was masterful from Edwards as much as it was from Ferguson.
Great story that. That was Barkley and Barton on Manchester United. Patrick Barkley and Wayne Barton there, who will be delivering a series of shows on Manchester United, the post-war history of Manchester United, that will be coming, landing on Love Sport sometime in mid-January. And comparisons can be made, of course, with Eric Cantona and Paul Pogba of the present day, two mavericks in this Manchester United side. Cantona, of course, bringing huge success to United. Pogba yet to really, really do that. Yes, we've seen a Carabao Cup. Yes, we've seen a Community Shield, and yes, we've seen a Europa League as well. But to be truly entrenched in United folklore and United history, Paul Pogba does need to step up. But has he got the players around him in order to help him do that? Lee Sharp, an ex-Manchester United star, ex-Manchester United winger who played with Eric Cantona, spoke to Andy Hodgson on his show kicking off earlier on today here on Love Sport to discuss that very issue.
Well, there's a difference between being match fit and being able to stand about shooting baskets and do little bits here and there. So I think sometimes can confuse fans as to how injured people are. But no, I'm sure he's still a massive integral part of Ollie's plans. I think he's probably one of the best players they've got, if not the best. And it's just about Ollie getting the best out of him and picking a team that supports Paul Pogba and gets the best out of him. Just getting fit, really, and allowing him to do what he wants to do. I think a lot of the problem with Pogba is We all know he can create and can score, but everyone goes on about his defensive qualities. But, you know, sometimes you have to allow for people to look after him in that department and let him get away a little bit with defensive duties to get the best out of him going forward. I think what you can get out of him going forward. He can create and score a goal or two a game. So as long as you've got other people that can take on the defensive roles, then you can allow him to do that. I mean, we had sort of Cantona in our team who didn't really do a lot of defending, and some of the best teams that have won things have always had players that have lacked a little bit defensively, but have had other players that can counteract that. So I think it's just about getting the balance right in the team and making sure that he knows that he's wanted and looked after and special, and I think it works for both.
You talk about Cantona, actually, sort of attitude is a really interesting one in a team dynamic, and you would know this better than anyone else having been there. You know, is the Pogba attitude in the team what the team needs at this time? Because you talk about Cantona, a brilliant team around him, you can carry people like that and have respect for them and let them get away with stuff. But is the Man United team in a place where they can have one of those players?
Well, that's the question, and that's what Ollie's paid a lot of money to decide. I think you have to. I think you know, if you're going to win things and win games, you have to have people like Paul Pogba in the team, not only because of his ability. I think very similar to how Cantona was. There's a little bit of arrogance about him, and I think it lifts the team when they're in the side, and they have when they're playing at their best, they have a standard that everybody else sort of rises to be the same as, and I think that's why you need Paul Pogba in the team. You need to get him on the ball as much as you can. You need to support him as much as you can, and try and get the best out of him. I think he's liked around the dressing room. I don't think the press saying he's sort of poison and he's troubling the camp, I don't think that's the reason at all. I think all the players get on with him and like him. So it's just about finding the right balance of the 11 that are out there that you can compensate for and sort of allow him to do less defensive work. Paul Pogba knows the club. He was there as a young lad. He knows what it takes to perform and what sort of levels you've got to achieve. He's done it at Juve. He does it for France. So there's no reason why he can't do it for United. I just think he was unbelievable when Ollie first took over. His last couple of games towards the end of last season, he struggled a little bit, and he's struggling a couple of games this season. But you know, you've got to be fair to Paul Pogba. The team at the start of this season was struggling a little bit. It was finding its feet. They were trying to get all of what Ollie was sort of saying and his ethos and philosophy of football matches. So there's been a big learning curve at the start of this season. And I think, you know, give Paul Pogba some responsibility, help him bring the young lads through, and help him with his mentality as much as his... I mean, his game sort of speaks for itself. He doesn't really need a lot of coaching. He just needs a bit of mental coaching, if you like, to not wave his arms in the air and not get down and know that he's got to help young lads as much as he can. And you need him in the team. He's one of the best players in the world when he's on song.
Yeah.
And he can win games on his own for you. So he's not going to do it every game. Eric Cantona didn't do it every game, but you know, because we sort of flash back 20, 30 years ago, everyone think he was the whole pivotal point of us winning leagues. But you know, there was 10 other players that were playing well and he had poor games as well as good games.
Yeah.
So no one does it every game for 90 minutes. So
I was going to say,
like getting the best out of him.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
Oh, it doesn't show signs of stopping, but now Ollie needs to do some shopping. But Mark Flanagan wants to know who's to come, who's to stay, who's to go. Well, this is the Manchester United Fan Show here on Christmas at Love Sport Radio. And if you haven't guessed already, we've got Mark Flanagan, our North West correspondent, on the line, who's going to talk all about transfers. Ollie's got his sack, Mark. What's he going to do?
Matt, what the hell was that?
What on earth?
I don't know what to say now. You've thrown the biggest curveball in the history of the Man United fan show.
We love to surprise on this show, Mark. It's good. It's good
it
to be
like
different.
Bing Crosby. It was like Bing Crosby after he'd had seven sherries.
That's what I was going for.
Oh, right. Well, you pulled it off. Well done.
Talk to me. Transfers. Right. Ollie's going to be shopping in January. Or is he? Or is anybody going to be out of the door? What say you?
Is he, though? This is the big question. And I was thinking about this, and we've been talking about what we're going to do for the final show of the decade. You know, we want to go out with a bang, don't we? Like all media outlets. And so I started compiling my list of targets. Jadon Sancho. Great. Eriksen would be helpful. Saul Niguezi, he'd be brilliant if we could get him. James Maddison, perfect. Just what United need. Bruno Fernandes. And then I watched Watford and today, and I just thought, goodness me, this issue is not going to be solved by two new faces in January. This is such a deeper lying and a bigger problem. And I think what every United fan wants for Christmas, and this would be the biggest Christmas present, and I think if he was able to say it, probably Ollie would even say it himself, is that Messrs. Joel, Avram, Brian, Kevin, Edward and Darcy have sat round the Glazer Christmas table in a couple of days, and maybe they've had a bit too much to drink, and maybe there's some home truths, and maybe they actually think, do you know what? We probably need to sell. We probably need to sell. We can take Ed Woodward with them, and they can take Matt Judge with them, who does the negotiating at United, and then they can actually get some people in at United who know what they're doing and know what they're talking about, who can build a cohesive transfer plan, who can actually give Ollie all the support and help and all the stuff that he needs to move United forward. And because unfortunately, we could talk to the cows come home about targets left, right and centre until that fundamental issue is resolved. I just can't see a way forward. I was just looking at Man United's midfield options at the moment, and it is just embarrassing, really. I mean, Paul Pogba came on today, and it was night and day, the difference that he made. Just simple things like just a give and go. Just a give and go and opening up space and simple things like that. And I was watching Watford 5 or 6 times, nice, neat passing, got themselves out of trouble, nice one-touch passing. You never see that from United's midfield. There is such fundamental surgery required, particularly in the middle of the park. And Paul Pogba, I've criticised him heavily for the way he, his attitude, and he gets exasperated and he throws his arms out at his teammates. But actually, do you know what? I was looking at that today thinking, God, he's got a point. He's got a point to be really frustrated, because when he came to United, he was sold a dream. He was told they were going to build a team around him, and they just have failed miserably. And I can understand why he is upset and dismayed, and he wants to leave Manchester United, because he's been let down by the guys above him. And going into the next decade, I'm really fearful that he's going to go in the summer, and then, you know, other players aren't going to come in, they're going to be promised. And this downward spiral that I think has been happening since Sir Alex Ferguson, it's difficult to see how it's going to get resolved until those guys at the top disappear.
Holy Christmas curveball, Mark Flanagan. So you are suggesting here that the biggest bit of business United need to do in January is see the owners go. You reckon the owners are out, a new regime at Manchester United, in order to give Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Paul Pogba, more importantly, of what you're saying, is what you think is going to happen?
Well, I don't think Pogba's going to leave. I mean, this is another discussion, because I think he's almost priced himself out of the market. Madrid have come out this week and said, we don't want him. Juventus, it's very difficult for them to pay his wages and the money that Manchester United want in terms of a fee. So Paul Pogba's going to knuckle down. I mean, Raiola came out and was saying various things, and that's probably could fill an hour's worth of discussion about what Raiola said. And then the Spanish paper Marca has come out and said that Real Madrid don't want him, and they're basically the mouthpiece of Real Madrid. So I think Paul Pogba's realised, Jesus, I'm not going to get my move that I'm desperately want. I'm going to have to start playing football now. And doesn't he all of a sudden appears off the bench? And for 20 minutes, it was like, wow, you could see, actually put into context, the limitations of Manchester United's midfield with just 25 minutes of playing really good, decent, attacking midfield football. And, you know, if he stays fit, I think he's the key, really, in terms of progression. But he needs help, and I just don't see it happening in January. Ollie keeps playing it down. He's actually said it might not happen, which I think is probably lowering expectations as well. So, I mean, the amount of speculation we've had about certain players, and I've mentioned a few already, how many of them really have come to fruition? And is Jadon Sancho going to come to United? You know, Saul Niguez, is he going to come from Atletico Madrid? They're not, are they?
No,
they're not.
Absolutely not.
With the way things are going, and that's the big issue. And I think people in football know, in terms of what happens at the top at Manchester United, and they just do not have confidence in the hierarchy that they're going to be able to lead a team to regular top four football. And I think that's why they need to go.
Well, you say it was night and day. I think you're right. A few fans have had a bit of a debate about this and saying, well, that's what you'd expect from Paul Pogba. And perhaps it's because there are quite clear deficiencies within United's midfield. Mm. But he did come on and looked a class above everybody else. We mentioned, you know, the ball's over top for Rashford and Greenwood. The fact that he was just trying it, the nice little 1-2 with Martial. But this is what we then need to see week in, week out. And people say, but he needs the players around him. I don't buy into that. I think the best players still perform. Look at Jack Grealish at Aston Villa. Still performing week in, week out, despite those around him. Despite Aston Villa losing games, he's still man of the match performing for Aston Villa. That's what Paul Pogba needs to do now.
Yeah, they do. But look where Aston Villa are. I mean, Grealish, I think he's... I really like Grealish. I mean, Ben was talking... was it Ben was talking about Grealish coming in? Oh, the guy
Ben,
before...
Ben Parsons was, yeah.
Yeah, Ben Parsons. But he would be perfect. But are they even going to be able to get him? I mean, this is the thing. Pogba knows better than anyone the sort of limitations of the players around him. And the problem is he can only do so much. You know, great players. I mean, Diego Maradona famously held Napoli to a couple of titles, but he's no Diego Maradona, and the game's moved on, and the pace and the legs that he needs around him, it's just... it's difficult to see how he can have so much of a transformative effect. And like we've seen before, throughout his period at United, he looks great in one game and then he'll go a couple of games and he just won't be. For 20 minutes, we know we've seen these false dawns before with Pogba. It was just nice to see him putting passes together and just doing pass and move and creating space and opening up the Watford defence, because until he came on, we just didn't see anything, did we?
No.
Even the Lingard chance came from a bit of the ball knocking around. It was a bit of a mistake from the Watford players.
Yeah.
The ball broke. There was a knife. It was Martial, wasn't it?
He
flicked it around the corner. And all of a sudden, Lingard's through. And bless him, Lingard, you know, just thought, as soon as you thought it was Lingard, you thought, oh, hold on a second. But I would like to say that Harry Maguire called out Lingard saying he had to score after the game. And things like that really don't help. And by the way, Harry Maguire, you should have also scored when you had that header. That was like a back pass. Mm. You could have put it anywhere else and it had a better chance of going in. So before you start calling out your teammates for saying you've got to score, you haven't even scored in a United shirt yet. And those things are kind of really unhelpful.
Yeah.
And for a guy low on confidence like Lingard, particularly unhelpful.
I 100% agree with you, Mark. Can't disagree with anything that you said, apart from me sounding like Bing Crosby after seven sherries. But we are going to finish. We've got about a minute to go, boss. This is the end of the decade as a Manchester United fan. Just give me a very quick summing up of what it's been like for you, your particular moments that stand out.
Well, the real standout moment now is I saw Alex Ferguson standing on the pitch saying to the United fans, you've got to be patient. Mm. And we didn't really realise the significance of that in terms of the guy was papering over it. What a genius, papering over the cracks, leading a team to the title by, what was it, 12 points with that team in 2013, 12 points or whatever it was. And for me, that stands out as a really poignant moment in terms of what's happened thereafter, because, goodness me, couldn't they do with some of his magic dust at the moment? It feels such a long way away from there now. We'll see what happens. It could be the roaring 20s.
Who knows? Mark, great having you on. I'm sure this is the last Manchester United fan show of the year. I'm sure you'll be back on Love Sport before the year's out. But in terms of this show, we'll see you in 2020, the roaring 20s.
It's been a pleasure, Matt.
Cheers, buddy. That was Mark Flanagan, our North West correspondent. And this has been the Manchester United fan show for 2019. We'll see you next year.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.